you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on Revolution Radio for the Raw Deal Live this 12th day of January 2024. I'm a special guest, James Rogeski, who's joining me, a political analyst and an issue activist who has astute observation to make about the World Health Organization. I'm going to begin, however, with some of the latest stories of the day and invite James' commentary as we proceed. Breaking. Texas National Guard takes control of the border, restricts border control access. About time. Border Patrol in Texas isn't restricting the invasion of illegal immigrants, so they're being restricted from that area as the National Guard steps in. I can almost hear the seething and rage from the left, can you? The Washington Examiner reports. In an effort to reduce illegal border crossing, Governor Greg Abbott ordered Texas troopers to seize control of a public Eagle Pass park overnight, defying the wishes of city officials. Eagle Pass Mayor Rolando Salinas said the Texas Department of Public Safety informed him Wednesday morning that the state received an emergency declaration from Abbott to take full control custody of Shelby Park. That is not a decision that we agreed to. That's not something we wanted. It's not something we asked for as a city, Selena said in a Facebook post. The video shows the Texas National Guard fencing off the park from the public. When Selena asked DBS why the state was seizing the park, they said, the mission is to prevent undocumented people from crossing into Eagle Pass, which has reported a record number of migrant crossings, quickly becoming one of the most heavily trafficked sectors of the U.S.-Mexican border. House Speaker Mike Johnson and dozens of Republicans visited the area last week, threatening to withhold financial aid for Ukraine or Israel unless the border were secured. He's got it right. Meanwhile, Bill Duglin tweets, the Texas Military Department confirms that Texas National Guard has seized control of Shelby Park and Eagle Pass, city property where mass illegal crossings are taking place, and restricting Border Patrol from accessing the area. Here's another call-in just in. Texas National Guard has seized Shelby Park and Eagle Pass, preventing Border Patrol from entering the area as the border crisis continues to spiral out of control. Good to see Texas taking the matters into its own hand. My hope and prayer, writes the author, is this catches on like wildfire, and other states and cities do the same. James, this is a most welcome development, in my opinion. Your thoughts? You're muted.
Nations have borders, and they're trying to dissolve them to create a one-world government. And, you know, this is just some of the things that are going on in the world are just so obvious, and the answers are so, you know, simple. But finding the political will to do them, you know, how long did this take to find the will to take an action? You know, it's astonishing the many things that are going on that have obvious solutions, but it seems like the powers that be, you know, want the problems to continue. They want the division. They want the divisiveness. They want the conflict. We were always, you know, set with border rules, and with the change to the administration, it all just fell apart.
Yeah, I think it's all happening because the administration wants it to happen. I don't think there's any aspect of this that they aren't approving of. It's as though George Soros were a president for domestic policy and Bibi Netanyahu for foreign. Meanwhile, and here's a perfect illustration, U.S. and U.K. strike Houthi sites in Yemen in response to unprecedented attacks. Joe Biden, actually the puppet, the stooges pulling the string, because we know it's not even the real Joe Biden, different shape and size of head, different ears, different signature, not the same guy, says he will not hesitate to direct further measures to protect international waterways after attacks on Red Sea shipping. The Houthis have been valiant, courageous, fearless. The U.S. and U.K. launched air and missile strikes in Houthi-controlled areas of Yemen, aiming to halt attacks on ships in the Red Sea. Biden, U.S. president, said American and British forces, with support from Australia, Bahrain, Canada, and the Netherlands, were involved in the attack, striking at least 60 targets in 16 locations. Biden said they are in direct response to unprecedented Houthi attacks against international maritime vessels in the Red Sea, including the use of anti-ship ballistic missiles for the first time in history. These attacks have endangered U.S. personnel, civilian mariners, and our partners, jeopardized trade, and threatened freedom of navigation. Our partners is the key. This is an action being taken on behalf of Israel, because the Houthis have been so successful in interdicting commercial traffic to Israel, regardless of the flags flown by the ships, and only to Israel, that the unloading at docks has ground to a halt. They have been 3 weeks minimally and would be likely to be three more if the Houthis continue. U.S. Central Command said the airstrikes, which took place around 3 a.m. Yemen time, targeted radar systems, air defense systems, storage and launch sites for one-way attack, unmanned aerial system, cruise missiles, and ballistic. Lieutenant General Alexis Grunwich from the Air Force said the U.S. had executed deliberate strikes on more than 60 targets at 16 Iranian-backed Houthi militant locations, including command and control nodes, munition depot, launching system, production facilities, and air defense. Notice, they want to emphasize the role of Iran, because bear in mind, Israel wants to finagle to induce the United States to attack Iran. Paul Craig Roberts have long since observed the war in Gaza appears to be an extension of 9/11, which was orchestrated by the Israelis in order to create a pretext for American forces being sent to the Middle East to take out the modern Arab states that serve as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region, where we took out Libya, Iraq, other states, but were ground to a halt in Syria by the introduction of Russian and Iranian forces at the request of the democratically elected president of Syria, and we never reached the Persian nation of Iran. Well, Netanyahu and other Zionist extremists aren't happy about that. They want to go further. Targets were hit by fighter jets from the U.S. Navy, U.S. Air Force, and Royal Air Force, along with ship-launched Tomahawk cruise missiles. Other locations, apart from the capital, targeted by the Houthis, were in the area of the port city of Hodeidah, the cities of Sayda and Damar. Houthi forces claim to have retaliated immediately against Western warships, but senior military officials said late Thursday no Houthi response had so far materialized. A Houthi show of defiance in the Red Sea is anticipated, as long as they're capable of carrying it out. The U.S. and U.K. claims that they've been taken to minimize civilian casualties, but that's about as responsible a statement as Israel claiming they're seeking to protect civilians in Gaza when they're clearly intending to slaughter every Palestinian or get them out of the lands of Palestine, to which they have a historical legacy dating back 2,000 or 3,000 years. The U.S. military said the Houthis had launched 27 attacks last Thursday when they fired a cruise missile into shipping lanes in the Gulf of Aden. The Houthis I admire greatly. James, your thoughts about these developments?
Well, you know, the map that you just showed, you know, showed an obvious choke point that's vulnerable. And one has to wonder about, you know, the preparedness of the United States military. You know, as I've seen with the WHO, you know, they do all of these simulations. They plan for all of these alternatives. But obviously, it appears that they were caught by surprise, you know, with this aspect. When you're looking at triggering actions that could result in a world war, you know, the amount of weaponry and the amount of, quite frankly, balance between forces, you know, in the entire world, they're just not prepared. They decimated the military with the jabs. You know, a lot of good people left. They're in disarray. The illusion that the U.S. military could handle even two wars, you know, on two fronts, is a fallacy. Trying to take on, you know, every organization around the world with the spread of the weapons that they have, in many ways, in various aspects, they're outgunned. And that's something that I think comes as a shock to almost everybody.
Well, Wayne Root, a conservative columnist, has just tweeted that this is going to be an interesting year. Can you imagine simultaneously engaging in war with the Houthis, with Iran, with Russia, with North Korea simultaneously, when our military is so depleted they can't make the recruiting goals, and when we've depleted all our munitions by sending them to Ukraine? I think he's got a point, James. I've never historically envisioned the United States as this weak militarily. And then, of course, we have the disappearance of our Secretary of Defense, about which I'm going to comment. Your thoughts about our overall military capability? I mean, even though it's all wrong, are we even capable of engaging this many adversaries across this range of fronts?
I'll make a very simple statement, Jim. Look at our commander-in-chief. Do you have confidence that he's capable of, you know, handling the complexity of something along those lines? And then you look down to the joint, you know, chiefs of staff and leadership. The leadership is getting themselves into a position that, you know, is this what they want? Are they trying to destroy the United States? If that's what they want, they're going about it, you know, and it seems like that's what they're doing.
I agree. I think it's our prospects at this point are very bad. Here's Colonel McGregor offering some reflections about how things stand. Very, very wise, thoughtful guy.
Today I have Colonel Douglas McGregor with me to talk about the chaos going on in Europe with Putin and Ukraine. Are we going to be drug into a Middle East conflict? Colonel McGregor, thank you so much for coming on today.
Sure, thanks.
So I've been reading that Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine is accusing Putin and Russia of being behind the Hamas attacks on Israel, and that there needs to be an international investigation. Is this his way of continuing to demonize Putin, or is he trying to pull Ukraine back into the media, or do you think there's any truth to his accusations?
No, I don't see any truth in it. And I think he's trying desperately to do whatever he can to drag us back into the war, because he knows that he's effectively on the road to being abandoned. He knows the money is going to stop. The arms have already stopped. The ammunition isn't coming. He's at the end of his rope. So I think he's probably ready to do or say anything that promises to help him in any way.
Yeah, okay. So by following your work and your contacts, we've learned the truth that millions, tens of millions of Ukrainians have fled Ukraine. They have no plan of returning to the country. 500,000 plus Ukrainian soldiers have been killed or injured. Yet the war continues with Zelensky remaining confident that he can win. Is this Zelensky employing his acting skills, or does he actually believe he can beat Russia and Vladimir Putin?
No, I think he's more sober-minded than that. He's at the end, and he's going to say whatever he can to prop himself up to the bitter end. Who knows what sort of fate awaits him? I think there's a darn good chance that he may not survive in office. He's offended, aggravated, angered millions of Ukrainians. He's led them down the path to total disaster. That usually ends badly for the leader. And then, of course, he's probably got a number of escape routes planned to various places where his bank accounts and homes are located. But, you know, look, this war is over. You know, if you wanted any evidence for that, all you had to do was essentially look at the budget fight over the money. Suddenly now everyone who was pushing war with Russia in Ukraine is now pushing war with the world inside Gaza for Israel. So we've just essentially taken the same chorus, moved it to a different theater. They're singing the same kinds of tunes, hoping for a better outcome. I don't think the outcome is going to be good in either case, but, you know, that's another matter.
Do you think, or what would you guess NATO leaders are telling Zelensky behind the scenes? Do you think that they're saying, hey, listen, we've supported you. We've given you more than enough. It didn't work out, and it's now time to get to the peace talk tables? Or do you think that they are still quietly behind the scenes pumping him up with confidence that he can win this thing?
I think he's probably being told privately that it's over and that he should probably step down graciously, which I don't think he can do, as I mentioned earlier, in favor of someone else stepping forward that the West can present as a credible representative of the remaining Ukrainian state, whatever that is, to sit down and negotiate some sort of end to the conflict with the Russians. I think any thoughts of turning Ukraine into the contemporary equivalent of Napoleon's Spanish ulcer for Russia are over. I don't think anybody thinks that that's possible. I also don't see much evidence that anybody in Europe wants that to happen. So, you know, we'll just have to watch. Now, I do see evidence that you still have some fighting. Ukrainians are sort of clinging with their fingernails to the edge of the cliff. And the Russians are now pressing ahead. Anybody who thinks that the Russians are sitting still is wrong. This Avdiivka fight, which is sort of Bakhmut on steroids, I think is about over. After that, I'm not sure there's much left. Whatever Ukrainians are there that still constitute the army will want to retire to the Dnieper River and cross it and get out of the way. The question is entirely up to the Russians. What do they want to do? What are they going to demand? Are they going to offer any terms at all? To whom will they speak? They're certainly not going to pay any attention to anything we say. We've yet to tell the truth to them about anything. So the question is, who can step forward? I don't have that answer. I think they've got to wait, frankly, until there's some turnover in European governments and they have new leadership before they can expect anything from them. So, you know, the tragedy is not yet completely over, but for all intents and purposes, this is the end. In other words, this is similar to the situation that existed after we crossed the Rhine and the Soviets reached the outskirts of Berlin.
Today,
James, I'd like your thoughts about what the colonel had to say. I'm very impressed with his comprehensive understanding of the situation. Your thoughts?
Oh, you know, to be facetious, Jim, isn't that exactly the same thing that they're saying all over the mainstream media?
You make a nice point. We're barraged with nothing but propaganda, very distantly related anything resembling truth. You're actually spot on.
Let me give you a tip. It may seem like I'm going off on a tangent, but I don't think so. In regards to the COVID event 201, you know, that was the simulation in October of 2019. Are you aware of the simulation in October of 2022 called Catastrophic Contagion? Anybody can go to catastrophiccontagion.com because I noticed that they neglected to get the domain name when they did the simulation. So I snagged it just to make fun of them. But it's a simulation for the next pandemic. That is scheduled for Eastern and Southern Venezuela. And if you look into what's going on there, it's potentially the next hotspot. Venezuela claims, you know, territory from their neighbor. And, you know, we're going from one conflict to another, to another, to another. And it all seems like it's part of a systematic attempt to destroy all of the nation states around the world to usher in a one world government. They don't like the idea of national sovereignty and, you know, the idea of a nation. And wherever they can go to spread discord and violence, and, you know, the bankers fund both sides. They profit from violence wherever it may be. You know, and we're busy, you know, mortgaging our future to the tune of trillions and trillions of dollars, paying for drugs for pharmaceutical companies and paying for weapons for nations all around the world. Did you sign up for this program? Did you vote for this? I know I didn't.
No, you're making great points. In fact, you know, with the COVID pandemic being basically a fantasy generated by manipulating numbers, such as there were like 38 million cases of the flu the year before and the following only 6,000 because they turned all the 37,998,000 into cases of COVID. But people weren't dying in any age group in proportional to a pandemic. It was all normal. Once a vax was introduced, the death began to skyrocket. And by my best estimate, over a billion have died worldwide because of the vax. So what they're doing is practicing biological warfare against the world's population under the guise of a medical procedure that is intended to enhance our safety. And I wonder how serious is this new pandemic, this contagion, going to be, James? How bad is it already in Venezuela?
Well, you know, that's just what, you know, they're simulating and putting out there for, you know, them to possibly do in the past. They did a very similar thing with what I call moneypox. The simulation was almost to the day. And so they have some strange rule that, you know, they feel a need to tell the world what they're planning. And, you know, most people are distracted by everything else under the sun. You know, all I've been doing for the past couple of years is reading their documents and, you know, telling people what they're telling us that they plan to do. And so, one of the things that I've been focused on is people just don't realize that the pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex is probably five times the size of the military industrial complex. We're being bled dry, you know, going into debt to fund these two, you know, horrific industries that are designed not to improve people's health or to improve their safety or, you know, get to peace. It's a depopulation agenda that people just don't seem to notice.
Oh, those are great points, James. I will invite you to expand upon them as we proceed. Meanwhile, reporters grilled John Kirby on the Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. The White House can't even tell us where Austin is today. White House National Security spokesman John Kirby could not answer reporters' question Wednesday whether Lloyd Austin is still in the hospital or has been released. He opened his part by telling reporters Austin had participated in a briefing Tuesday with Joe Biden and other national security principals on the conflicts in the Red Sea and the Middle East. I guarantee you that's all total bullshit. Later, when asked where he was when he took part in the briefing, a pained-looking Kirby shook his head in frustration that Austin was in the hospital when he took part in the briefing, but referred reporters to the Pentagon for further information. Kirby took several questions, confirming Austin did not tell Biden about his prostate cancer diagnosis. This is all a fabricated cover story. Austin's month-long secrecy about his cancer diagnosis, followed by his secrecy about having surgery and then being hospitalized for a complication, had prompted calls for his resignation or firing. Kirby defended Austin when a reporter asked whether he is an essential member of the administration, given that no one noticed Austin was missing. The White House has said Biden has no intention of firing Austin. Well, why are we getting these preposterous stories about lack of communication? I think we have the answer. Real Raw News is published, and I don't regard it as a highly reliable site. In this case, I think they're telling us exactly what happened. Austin dead in Ukraine. Criminal Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin was allegedly killed in Kiev on January 3rd when Russian cruise missiles pelted a command bunker where Austin and Lieutenant General Valery Zazuny, commander-in-chief of the Ukrainian army, were meeting secretly to discuss mounting an asymmetrical offensive to bring Vladimir Putin to his knees, claims a Russian FSB source known for his invaluable intelligence and the truth behind Putin's special military operation in Ukraine. FSB agent Andrei Zakharov's tale contradicts the administrative narrative of Austin clandestinely hospitalizing himself for an unknown ailment at Walter Reed. Friday, Frenzy and Haywire will return with my special guest right after this break.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
This is such an interesting story that illuminates the corruption, the deception of the administration that I want to follow up a bit more. Friday evening, that would be a week ago, this whole story has endured with this complete fraud for over a week. A frenzied media went haywire after Politico ran an article about Austin admitting himself to the hospital and staying there an entire week without notifying his criminal in chief, President Joseph R. Biden. The report quickly spiraled into undreamt of drama, engulfing all levels of government, with several lawmakers calling for Austin to resign for poor judgment and lack of transparency at once. Austin's unannounced absence had embarrassed a criminal regime struggling to stay afloat. Zakharov refutes the hospital story because he insists Austin and a bevy of Ukrainian brass were tucked away in what they thought was a secure military command center 20 feet beneath the streets of Pechersky district in central Kiev. Russian intelligence had marginal luck tracking Austin's trip into and out of Ukraine since early 2023. He'd spent so much time in Kiev, he ought to have applied for Ukrainian citizenship, Zakharov joked, adding that the secretive and self-admittedly reclusive Austin had traveled to Ukraine from Poland 8 times in 2023. In early November, a Spetsnaz hunter-killer team entered Kiev undetected after learning that Austin had arrived to personally deliver fantastic news to Zelensky that the U.S. and U.K. had voted to give him even more free money and arms. The Spetsnaz had eyes on Austin and Zelensky and came close to killing them, but the team aborted the mission at the last moment due to unforeseen and unspecified complication. Vladimir Putin, Zakharov said, had bestowed upon Austin the title of war criminal. Putin, he added, delighted in Austin's demise. We knew Austin was in Ukraine. We discovered the rendezvous point. We also know the pig Zaluny. He's a killer of women and children, was to meet his lieutenants to learn about new drone warfare. They were our intended targets. Austin was a bonus. 20 cruise missiles, he said, destroyed service buildings and collapsed a labyrinth of interconnected chambers underground. A battle damage assessment revealed the strike had razed the structures and cratered what lay beneath. Only rubble remained. Nothing on this earth could survive what we sent. Yes, he is dead. He must be dead, Zakharov said. Real raw news, American sources in the White Hat community, while stopping short of dismissing the story as wishful thinking, said they want to see irrefutable proof before scratching his name off their own most wanted list. However, they've called the official narrative a blatant lie that if Austin had gone to Walter Reed, the sources would have taken notice and informed General Smith's office. We don't know if that Russian story is baloney or not. Our sources at Reed are unimpeachable and say he was never there. As far as your other question, Mike, we don't have him. If I learn more, I can share. Oh, I will let you know. James, the official, the true story, of course, that he died in Kiev in this Russian missile strike is so embarrassing to the administration, which it claims that the United States is not directly involved. But here we are, our Secretary of Defense in Kiev, collaborating with the head of the Ukraine Armed Forces in a direct military role vis-a-vis Russia. So what they have done, and I think it was actually ultimately unwise, Richard Nixon, an expert in the area, said It's not what you did that gets you. It's the cover-up. This cover-up is so atrocious. It's so completely unbelievable. There's no possible way the Secretary of Defense could be out of communication for a day, much less a week, with a communication in his subordinates and everything. This is a chain of command. It ain't possible. I discuss it with Scott Bennett, a former Army Intel and PsyOps officer, and he related a story of how he was in Georgetown many, many years ago and saw then Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld on the street with his wife, and he just greeted him and said, you know, hi, Secretary Rumsfeld. Immediately, four SEALs emerged from the background that he hadn't even realized were there because they were the covert protection team. The story is preposterous. In my opinion, it 100% validates it. That Austin is dead. And of course, they can't say where he is because he was blown into 1,000 little pieces. I mean, this is a calamity for the United States either way. And frankly, what they're saying is so blatantly, provably, obviously false. I think they're doing themselves more damage. It's a classic case of you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. They're still digging, James.
You know, anytime I see a news story that's all over the place, you know, meaning everyone is talking about it, yes, all of the things that you said, absolutely true. But what is it that this is distracting people from? What else in the world is going on that they don't want you to pay attention to when this is driving, you know, the media? Well, you know, what could be the ramifications of this going forward? At some point, I would expect to hear this kind of a story about Biden. You know, his health is failing. At any point in time, are we going to hear, where's the president? And so these kinds of stories are distracting from what is really going on with the military. You know, at some point, if and when an aircraft carrier in the Mediterranean is starting to form a new coral reef because its vulnerabilities have been, you know, shown to be so obvious. If the Russians want to, they can do what you just described. If they want to, they can do much more. And many, many other nations around the world. I get it, you know, focusing on a missing person who may very well, you know, be deceased and under a pile of rubble in Kiev. Distracts people from the important aspects. What in the world are we doing? And so focusing on personalities and all of the stuff that goes flying over Twitter, where are the grownups in the room in Washington, D.C., who are, you know, actually thinking about the future of the United States and the disaster that they're setting up? You know, it all kind of comes back around to the same story. Are they standing up for, you know, defending the Constitution and the United States, or are they intent on destroying the country that, you know, they're supposedly leading?
Well, James, look, there's no other story to distract from. I mean, we all know about the border. We all know about the Houthis. We all know about the genocide. If there were some story to distract from, that might be plausible. But frankly, this is a huge story. The Secretary of Defense killed in Kiev. That means the U.S. is directly engaged in war with Russia. This is what they're going out of their way to suppress, and they're doing a terrible botched job of it. This is such an embarrassment. It's destructive of U.S. credibility, you know, at home and abroad. I am stunned by the development and their incapacity to handle it in a more successful way, but that reflects on the utter incompetence of this administration from top to bottom. Let's see about maybe one more story, and then I want to turn to some of your further reflections about the World Health Organization. Which countries back South Africa's genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice? The International Court of Justice in The Hague will hold its first hearing. It's already been held Thursday, yesterday. Several countries welcoming the move amid a global chorus for a ceasefire. South Africa filed the lawsuit in December accusing Israel of genocide. seeking to halt a brutal military assault that's killed more than 23,000 Palestinian, nearly 10,000 of them children. The 84-page filing by South Africa says Israel violated the 1948 Genocide Convention drawn up in the aftermath of World War II and the Holocaust. Both Israel and South Africa are signatories to the Genocide Convention, which gives the ICJ, the highest UN legal body, jurisdiction to rule on disputes over the treaty. So which countries have welcomed and are supportive? Well, how about the Organization of Islamic Countries? 57 members, including Saudi Arabia, Iran, Pakistan, Morocco, Malaysia. The Malaysian foreign minister has welcomed the application. Turkey, again, posted on January 3rd, welcoming the move. Jordan, January 4th, that they're backing South Africa. Bolivia, historic, the first Latin American country to back the case. The Maldives, Namibia, and Pakistan, all have expressed support for the genocide case filed by South Africa during the UN General Assembly. Here are signatories. Here's a map showing how much of the world has signed on to the Genocide Convention. It's like 95% of the world population, I would estimate. Meanwhile, here's a report about how it ties into the United States for its support of the genocide.
Hello and welcome to Useful Idiots. I'm Katie Halper.
And I'm Mary Mache. Hey, everybody. Our website is usefulidiotspodcast.com. Go there for bonus content and to support the show. And Katie, you have an exciting event to announce coming up in New York City.
I do. So Tuesday, January 16th at 7 p.m., I'll be in a historic moment doing a live show with none other than journalist Rania Kallik, journalist Abby Martin, and PSL presidential candidate and organizer Claudia de la Cruz. And that's going to be at the People's Forum in New York City. And you can buy tickets at peoplesforum.org. And it's going to be great. If you're not in town, although I really do recommend if you're in town that you go, I think, sadly, though, which is that Israel just killed journalist Hamza Dadu, as well as his colleague Mustafa Thuraya, in an airstrike in a supposedly safe area of Gaza. And they were ironically trying to interview people who had been displaced by bombings. And Hamza is the son of Al Jazeera's Gaza bureau chief, Wael Dadu. And people probably remember that Dadu was shot. His colleague was killed. He was shot. He survived. And also his wife, daughter, son, and grandchild were killed, along with 21 other people who were in a refugee camp that they went to following warnings from Israel to evacuate.
Well, James, why don't you go ahead and comment on the story and add whatever you would like, because the U.S. has been supporting. One of the outcomes of this, by the way, in my opinion, would be to recommend that Israel be expelled from the United Nations. And even though the United States is a founding member and permanent member of the Security Council, frankly, the same could be done to the United States. Many would welcome getting the U.S. out of the U.N. just as they want the U.N. out of the U.S. Your thoughts, James?
Well, Jim, I sent you a link in the chat. I don't know if you're able to pull it up. I can certainly talk about it. You know, one of the interesting things to understand is who are the current members on the International Court of Justice. The president is Joan Donahue from the United States. The vice president is from Russia. If Israel is condemned for genocide, the United States bears responsibility. Also on the court is the judge from China, who have their own genocide issues to deal with. And so the question is, you know, is the court a court of justice, or is the court, you know, a politically influenced body of people who, you know, once you open up the can of worms of genocide, other nations are then vulnerable. So will that influence how these judges vote? It's an interesting question. I've seen commentary, you know, in one direction and in another direction. I don't honestly know, you know, what is in the minds of those judges and what rules them. The genocide and the killing is obvious. The statements that have been made is obvious. But the United States bears responsibility, as do many other nations. And these things have happened, you know, many, many times before. They may very well make a decree. And if they do decree that it is a genocide, every nation that is a signatory to the court is obligated to stop that genocide. Is that going to happen? Are nations going to take those actions? You know, would a ruling have any teeth? Or, you know, would it actually just, you know, exacerbate this, you know, I don't want to manifest into the universe, you know, a world war, but, you know, is it going to settle tensions or is it going to exacerbate them? It's an interesting question that, you know, I can't predict. I think we're just going to have to wait and see.
Well, I'm willing to go out on that limb, James. I'm going to tell you, there's never been such a blatant case of genocide that's been televised every day for now, like 3 months. The whole world can see. Israeli leaders, including Bibi Netanyahu, have made it very clear their intent is to kill every Palestinian or remove them from Palestine. So the issue of intent, just as you were saying, it's very obvious what's going on is established. Normally, that would be the subtle question that might make a conclusion elusive. But if this International Court of Justice is to have any viability whatsoever, it cannot avoid holding Israel guilty of genocide, of violating the convention. And frankly, it's one of the most clean-cut, clear legal methods of dealing with the mass slaughter taking place here. And I like your point about how under the treaty, then every nation that's a signatory is obligated to take measures to bring it to an end. I am very impressed South Africa undertook this. There's some who say, well, it's ironic that South Africa, an apartheid state in the past, should have brought this against Israel, which is another apartheid state. But apartheid, that's really a form of segregation. The United States was, for a significant period of time, what could have been described as an apartheid nation. That is completely different kettle of fish than genocide. If I am right, and I think that if they fail to find genocide in this case, then there's no meaning to genocide in terms of convention whatsoever. That is, has no legal or moral standing. Any nation is entitled to commit a genocide with impunity. If this is allowed to stand, if you follow this line of argument, what then would be your conclusion?
You know, I honestly, I'm going to wait and see. One of the things I do, Jim, is I stick to facts. I don't typically go off onto speculation island. One of the things that I am disappointed is there were cases brought before the court for what is essentially democide. You know, our governments with these jabs are doing that on a massive scale around the world. And, you know, those cases were not even heard. And so our court systems, both, you know, local, federal, international, what we're going to see in addition to what's, you know, decided with the case in Israel is whether or not, you know, even the International Court of Justice has been so corrupted and politicized that they cannot make a decision without being influenced by their masters.
Well, there you have two contrasting views about what's taking place. And James, I appreciate very much your very sober, well-reasoned approach here to, in this case, wait and see. Now, you got a lot to tell us about World Health Organization and other frauds on a massive scale, which I interpret as being furtherance of the biological warfare agenda to depopulate the world by as much as 95%. It's absolutely staggering what's going on. You cannot fault them for lack of ambition. Yours, James, tell us.
Well, Jim, I can rant for 5 minutes or 5 days. How much time would you like me to condense all that I have to say into?
How about 20 minutes?
Okay. I'm involved in many, many, many different things, and one of them is a website, PreventGenocide2030.org. That is really what we're dealing here with. And so people who want to take action can go there and fill out information to support legislation in the United States Congress to exit the United Nations and exit the WHO, because quite frankly, as long as we are allowing globalists to, you know, attempt to control what's going on, we're barking up the wrong tree. We need to abolish those organizations and focus on individual health, not, you know, some kind of collective globalist view where people in Geneva purportedly know what's better for you and I in regards to maintaining, optimizing, and improving our health or regaining it. And so where this all really starts is people need to have an understanding of the negotiations that are going on being conducted by the WHO. There's two separate tracks. They want to amend an existing document, the International Health Regulations. If you want to talk about conspiracy, Jim, where were you in July 1969 when the moonshot was either going on the moon or in a Hollywood soundstage?
Well, I was in Bloomington, Indiana. I was completing my PhD in the history and the philosophy of science, which I earned in 1970.
Okay, so you probably weren't paying much attention, as nobody was, to the 22nd annual meeting of the World Health Assembly in Boston, Massachusetts, because 5 days after the moon landing, they adopted the International Health Regulations. That's when they began in July 1969. Now, most people have probably never heard of nor read that document. There are some good things in there about contagious disease and so forth, but what's missing in that document is at the core of the problem. It did not ever get submitted to the Senate for their two-thirds consent. The way that was structured is the appointed delegates who showed up at the assembly and adopted that International Health Regulations put in there a method by which if no nation rejected it for 9 months, then it would go into effect on the first day of 1971. Thank you very much, Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger. They devised a way to make it so that they could essentially, I believe, illegitimately avoid any kind of Senate input. And 54 years later, that is accepted as a legally binding international agreement, even though the Senate never said a word about it. Fast forward to 2022, after SARS-1, they went through another round of amendments, and the Senate never weighed in on that. In 2022, the WHO, it's a long story, I'll keep it short, the World Health Assembly in May of 2022 pretended to adopt amendments to 5 articles that were submitted by the Biden administration to dramatically shorten the time frame to implement the next round of amendments. But we actually got a dozen members of the European Parliament to send a letter to Tedros back on November 28th demanding evidence that they even had a vote. They just said they did. And so the members of Parliament said, without evidence that you actually voted to adopt these changes, they're null and void. And so where we find ourselves now is back in that same session, May of 2022, the nations called for a working group to consider amendments to the International Health Regulations, another package. And on September 30th of 2022, 94 nations submitted 197 pages with over 300 amendments to an 80-page document. And so for the last year or so, they've been negotiating in secret. And what I published back in October, they had a public meeting. You know, I didn't hack anything. I'm not a whistleblower. I'm just reporting on the things that they put out in the public. Their co-chair of the working group said that they're not going to meet their deadline. And the deadline is coming up very quickly. It's January 27th. Now, the reason for that deadline is Article 55 of the International Health Regulations says very clearly that any nation can submit amendments, but they have to do so 4 months in advance of the May assembly. They meet once a year in May, which is scheduled for May 27th. So 4 months in advance of that is January 27th. Well, they know that they have been unable to reach agreement. And if they were honorable people, what they would have done is put out a press release and said, well, you know, we'll give you a progress report, you know, a status update, but we're going to have to keep negotiating and we'll shoot for 2025. But what they did, and I have documented all of this on my site, is they spent about an hour discussing how they're going to avoid that international rule. They scheduled meetings for February and April, and they plan to continue negotiating in secret and drop it on the doorstep of the assembly at the last minute, very much like Nancy Pelosi, who famously said, I believe it was about Obamacare, you know, when they wheeled in the 1,000-page bill and said they're going to have a vote, you know, just vote for it and you can look at it later. That is unacceptable. And so what we're dealing with here is actually good news, because they're having difficulty reaching an agreement. What they're dealing with is the people need to understand the reality that this is not about health. This is not about how you treat a respiratory ailment or any other such thing. They're not, you know, hearing testimony from doctors and nurses and reevaluating the mistakes that were made over the past 4 years. What this is in reality is a trade dispute. And it mirrors in many ways what's going on in the world. The smaller, less wealthy nations are unhappy with nations like Israel, the European Union, United Kingdom, Canada, United States, Australia, New Zealand, because they got contracts and hogged up all the remdesivir, all of the ventilators, all of the jabs. And the poor nations are not recognizing that they love you.
Hold that thought, James. We'll be right back with my special guest, James Escape, right after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. The time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet, not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back to my continuing conversation with my extremely thoughtful guest, James Roguski. James, continue about the WHO et al.
People really need to understand why these negotiations are even happening. And it all started when the vaccine rolled out at the beginning of 2021. And I use that term loosely. It's really a biological weapon. But in the middle of that year, it became apparent that certain nations, Israel, the European Union, the United Kingdom, America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, had gotten contracts to pretty much hog up all of the available production. And the smaller, less wealthy nations around the world were of the opinion that they were being treated in an inequitable fashion from a trade perspective. Now, I want to make sure people don't that they do understand that this is not about health. They're not arguing about, whether or not these drugs and jabs were good or bad. This is a trade dispute. And so they called for the WHO to negotiate a new agreement, which in my view, if any place, it should have gone to the World Trade Organization. But we have a bunch of bureaucrats, handling what they are pretending is a health issue when it's really about how to control the distribution of goods. So they started these negotiations, and in September of 2022, they submitted 300 amendments. They were finally made public in December, and I'd like to talk in detail, not about all 300, but just the amendments that were submitted by Bangladesh and 47 nations in Africa who submitted it as a block. Now, they both separately submitted these amendments to create a new Article 13A in the International Health Regulations, which did not exist previously. And both of these submissions were very similar. It's quite unusual. They're not identical, but they're very, very similar. And so their proposed solution to, quote unquote, equitably distribute pandemic-related products understands that the director general, under the current international health regulations, pretty much can declare what is known as the Public Health Emergency of International Concern, PHEIC, or FAKE, anytime he wants. The only thing that's really restricting him is if he keeps, you know, crying wolf, the world will stop listening to him. Clearly, he overrode his advisory committee when he declared a fake for what I call moneypox. They know that he can declare an emergency, and their proposed amendments would empower him to be the person who makes the decision as to which products are needed. He would then create an allocation mechanism in which he could tell Nation A, probably some developed nation with the manufacturing capacity, to manufacture whatever he said and give it to the nations that he says need it. Now, you know, if you look at that just outline that they requested, that is about as classic totalitarian, dictatorial, Marxist, communist, you know, control of the means of production, put it all in the hands of one dictator, as I think you could possibly imagine. And so that was submitted well over a year ago. They have been negotiating for that period of time in secret. We really don't have any way of knowing whether or not that is still, you know, on the table or if it's been kicked to the curb. But in addition to that, in order to facilitate that, Bangladesh proposed changing the definition of a couple of words. Now, there are, in Article 1 of the IHR, there are definition of terms, and there's two terms, standing and temporary recommendations, and they're defined as non-binding advice. Any school kid would understand that a recommendation is not binding. It's advice. Well, Bangladesh proposed crossing out the words non-binding, and Malaysia submitted an amendment to Article 42 that said recommendations shall clear that. Hold on, wait a minute. If you change the definition of the word recommendation, and you know, the WHO is meant to be an advisory body, if you're going to set up the director general as the dictator general, that changes everything. That flies in the face of the constitution of the WHO. It gives them authority that, you know, they were not designed to have. And so these nations want the WHO to force wealthy nations to provide the products, because what they are looking for is intellectual property and manufacturing know-how so that they can manufacture drugs and jabs in their own country and glean some of the profits from it. Now, where this all, I think, really took hold was when Omicron was reported by South Africa and Botswana. They actually followed the rules in the international health regulations, and they reported it openly to the world. But then what happened is the international health regulations were violated by the many nations who put on travel restrictions on South Africa. And then when they saw Pfizer and Moderna take that genetic information and turn it into the boosters and make a couple of more $1 billion, there's a plan in the other document, the treaty that most people refer to it as, which is very different. It's a pathogen access benefit sharing system. To make a long story short, if nations identify a pathogen, they would hand it over to the WHO's central hub, and any drug company that made a product from it would have to give 20% to the WHO to be distributed as they see fit. Now, that's a different sort of mutated capitalistic solution, but it's, again, trying to turn biological weapons, you know, pathogens with pandemic potential, into a profiteering, you know, system where it's not designed to stop the next pandemic. It's designed to build a system to profit from it. And so I am of the mind that these organizations are corrupted to the point where they cannot be repaired. I'm an advocate, if people go to exitwho.com, we have in the U.S. legislation that's already gotten over 50 co-sponsors to exit the WHO. It's only about a page and a half long. It says, stop giving them money, give them notice that we're leaving, and repeal the legislation from 1948 that got us involved in the first place. If that's not good enough for you, you can go to stoptheglobalagenda.com, and we're supporting legislation in both houses to not only exit the WHO, but also exit the United Nations. And so the question is really simple. We've got election time coming up, whether people are running for the House or the Senate or for president. Do you want these globalist organizations, people in New York or Geneva or Brussels or wherever they may be, to tell you what is best for your health? Or do you think that you have unalienable rights and freedoms and that it is only up to you to decide what you do or do not do to your body? Now, the other aspect that they're trying to control is the flow of information. And so, you know, they want to have mis and dis and malinformation be controlled. But in reality, they are the biggest source of the infodemic. I've spent the last 2 years reading their documents, watching their videos, you know, living off of their word salad. People need to know that the WHO's budget was about $4 billion in 2022, and they paid their 8,851 employees an average of $120,000 a year to pump out propaganda and misinformation. They spent 30% of their budget. The United States gave them $750 million over and above what we were obligated to do. And I'll just leave it here, Jim. What are we getting in return for that, as they put it, investment? All right, we're getting misinformation and, you know, attempts to build out the pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex with public money. And I just, quite frankly, say no.
Oh, I think you've made wonderful points, James. Your argument is completely cogent, very detailed and specific. I like everything you had to say here, and the fact that the military pharmaceutical industrial complex is five times more massive than the military industrial congressional is stunning. We all need to appreciate the enormous influence they wield and how this is medicine for profit. It's really not even intended to maintain your health. I think the Hippocratic Oath is a figment of the distant past. Do no harm. They figured out a way how do harm, but only if it profits you massively. And all the COVID and the Remdesivir and other products, which took the lives of some near and dear to me personally, among many, many others, is just a disgrace. It's absolutely outrageous. And now we even have Johns Hopkins bringing back a mask mandate. Anyone who's studied the use of masks realizes they're harmful for you. In fact, Tony the Rat participated in a study of the Spanish flu, which took the lives of 15 or 20 million worldwide, which discovered that most of the deaths were not from the flu, but from bacterial pneumonia infections that were produced by wearing face masks, which recirculate waste products the body is seeking to get out of its system, deprive the body of much-needed oxygen, kills brain cells, which, unlike skin cells, do not regenerate. It's dumbing down the population. It's making you more vulnerable to infection. It's causing harm to children because they cannot see words being formed by mouths when they interact with their parents. And it's had an adverse effect on the speech development of a whole generation from the past fake pandemic. And then the very lethal effects from the vax, which, of course, destroys your immune system and makes you vulnerable to any number of threats and hazards in your body that otherwise previously were being dealt with successfully until your immune system was removed. So now you have this diversity of deaths from many different effects. Well, it's not obvious that it all occurred because they removed your protective barrier, your immune system. James.
To back up a couple of things you said, I put together several months ago a webpage called maskcharade.com. And, you know, the evidence is, it just goes on and on and on. Prior to 2020, you know, even the WHO clearly stated that, you know, masks do not perform the function that they were ultimately attempted to be used for. Rewinding a little bit further, you mentioned, you know, the military and its involvement and the difference between that and the pharmaceutical complex. But they've actually merged under something called the Global Health Defense Agenda. And so the idea is, I think I misspoke on that. The Global Health Security Agenda. And back in November of 2022, the Indonesian health minister was speaking to the B20, not the G20, the government meeting, but all of the business people that met at the B20. And he said very clearly, he was talking about the World Bank's pandemic fund, which the United States started. The National Defense Authorization Act has allocated $1 billion a year to a build out of all of these laboratories and testing and genomic sequencing, biological warfare, quite frankly. And what he said to the business leaders back in November of 2022, go invest. This is a great business opportunity. They've got a multi-million-dollar fund to build out. And so if you're in the business of laboratory equipment or genomic testing or any things that are pandemic related, they're putting that out as a growth industry. And people need to realize that that's what these negotiated documents really are. They're not about how to improve anyone's health or address the mistakes that were made over the last 4 years. This is just, how do you get more public money and private donations to fund the build out of the industry in the nations that didn't get the jab the first time around? Now, if you look at the WHO's website, most people probably don't think about this. In North and South America combined, there's a lot of people in Africa, but 16 times as many people in North and South America died over the past 4 years. Their deaths were attributed to COVID than in Africa. And so you have to ask yourself, why are they unable to see the obviousness of whatever was done in Europe and North and South America was 16 plus times more deadly? We should be going to Africa and asking them, well, what did they do and what did they not do? Instead, these negotiations are trying to take this failed system. If you look at it from a point of view of health, from a financial standpoint, it was very successful. They jabbed up 3/4 of the population in the developed world, but they only jabbed up about 25% in the lesser developed world. And what they're trying to do is get the developed nations to pay for a build out to jab the rest of the world. This is democide. You know, democide is when government tries to kill their own people. And, you know, we're in the middle of this. It's a different kind of war. You know, it's a war where probably your doctor advised you to do something, and that something is making you more ill. And most people, unfortunately, are blind enough that they don't see it. So they go back to the very same, you know, doctor or hospital or clinic that is causing their illness to get more, quote unquote, treatment, when they don't realize that the tests and the drugs and the jabs, I've referred to them for years as customer acquisition tools. You get tricked by a test, you take a poison or an injection, you end up with side effects from it, and you go back to the very same people who did that to you in the first place. Why people are unable to see that is a mystery, but it's very good propaganda, very good programming, very good hypnosis. I've referred to the WHO as the World Hypnosis Organization because they do a lot of programming and propaganda, but other people call them the World Homicide Organization, the World Holocaust Organization, or the World Hell Organization. And if you actually study their history, you realize that, you know, what we need to do is exit the WHO and ideally abolish them from the face of the planet. If you're a believer in creation, maybe man has been on the planet for several thousand years. If you're a believer in the Big Bang theory, maybe it's been hundreds of thousands of years. Prior to 1940s, we were doing pretty okay without a World Health Organization, and I think we should return to the time where individuals take care of their health and the bureaucrats in Geneva can go find themselves another job.
Well, I think your point about African countries suggesting removing the words non-binding is absolutely devastating because, as you emphasize, it changes the character of the WHO completely from an advisory, which is, you know, you can debate about the merit, but it's not obnoxious to be advisory, but to be mandatory, to be required legally to follow, you're creating a medical dictatorship. I think they have very cleverly recognized that this is a way of trading on people's emotions, a belief, the desire to maintain their health, which is being supported by propaganda that this organization is dedicated to maintain your health when actually its role is rather the opposite. So I think your case is 100% persuasive. Add more.
To be precise, both the African Group of Nations and Bangladesh submitted this very communistic Marxist philosophy to put the director general as, you know, commander-in-chief of all of the logistics. It was actually Bangladesh that submitted a change in the definition of the word recommendation.
Right.
Malaysia submitted a change to make recommendations mandatory. And of all places, India submitted an amendment to Article 3 to cross out language that is in Article 3, which is, you know, the fundamental purpose of the WHO. When I first read the international health regulations and I got to Article 3 and I read what I'm about to talk about, I said, well, you know, that's not so bad. It currently says that the international health regulations shall be implemented with full respect for the dignity, human rights, and fundamental freedoms of people. India actually proposed crossing that out to replace it with equity and, you know, inclusivity and so forth. And you just scratch your head and you go, did they actually put that in writing? And they did. And so whether or not that amendment is still on the table, it's an indication of the insanity that we're dealing with. We're dealing with people who are arguing for additional investment so that they can manufacture their own mRNA jabs and all of the drugs that obviously did not work. And the insanity that's going on there seems to be incurable. They are so deep into these negotiations, the blessing that we have is that the greed on one side, the pharmaceutical companies who are coming from primarily the wealthier nations, are refusing to give up intellectual property and manufacturing know-how and profits. And the smaller nations, you know, that's what they want. And so what we're faced with is a sort of a, you know, worldwide argument, I'll just put it that way. And the WHO, in my view, is in the position of being torn limb from limb. I said before that I don't speculate, but I will go out on the speculation island, Jim. I would not be surprised, and I'm just making this up out of whole cloth. This is not anything I have any information about. But I would not be surprised to wake up one morning and read a report that a group of nations have announced the creation of the BHO, the BRICS Health Organization. What's stopping them from telling the WHO to go take a hike? What is in it for the vast majority of nations? Well, here's how this deal works. Many of the smaller nations, their yearly dues are surprisingly small, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000. If they vote yes the way the powers that be want them to vote on whatever issue might be there. And they stand to gain tens of millions of dollars in contracts for laboratories, for whatever it may be. You can see how this organization is so corrupt. It's got nothing to do with your health. It's all about redistributing wealth.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, James, I'm very impressed. I think that's a great idea. BHO, I foresee it in the future. I think you're absolutely right. That's a marvelous recommendation. And I won't be surprised if BRICS pick up on it and run, carry that ball and move it forward. I think it's a brilliant idea.
There really isn't a nation on the planet that needs an international control grid over the top of whatever it is they do. Now, to add it for the United States in a little different way, if anyone were to go and download a digital copy of the United States Constitution, do a word search for the word health, and you're not going to find it, because the federal government does not have any authority at all over health. Don't take my word for it. Go look up an interview that Javier Becerra, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, gave earlier, well, back in 2023. He was asked what he would like Americans to know about the department that he heads, Health and Human Services. And he didn't skip a beat. His immediate answer was, oh, I want Americans to understand that the federal government does not have any authority at all over health. That is a state's issue. And so they know that they don't have authority. But then he went on to say, but we do have a lot of money. And so by setting up Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare, and so forth, they coerce people into giving up their freedoms in return for quote-unquote benefits.
James, stand right by. We'll come to another break, and I'll invite your calls right after when we return with my special guest today.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com. the People's Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, we do have a caller here, even before I announce the number, 608-957-8727. 608-957-8727, area code 816. Brian, is that you?
It's me. One thing I want to point out when it comes to BRICS, okay, the director of the Central Bank of Russia is an Elvira Navalina, some name like that, and she's one of the World Economic Forum people. And to me, BRICS is some kind of a big scam, because what good does BRICS do if the Rothschilds are printing all the money for those countries? Okay, I haven't seen where Russia prints its own money. You know, the reason Libya was in trouble was they were printing their own money. They were going to have that, you know, African dinar, the same with Iraq. And all those guys, the Rothschilds prints everyone's money in the world. So BHO would be great, but I don't think our controllers would allow it. I just look at BRICS as some kind of an illusion, especially when it was hatched up by a guy, the head of Goldman Sachs way back when. He's the one that came up with BRICS. So I don't see BHO working because of that.
James.
I absolutely agree with the caller. I wasn't recommending it. What I said was I would not be surprised to see that happen. And it would just sow additional division. All of the things that you're saying, I in general agree with. It would probably end up being just another illusion. The point I'm getting at is the last thing we need is a global control grid over what really needs to be an attention to individual health. So I hear you. Absolutely.
Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, it's just like when you were talking earlier about how, you know, Texas National Guard are on the border. Well, listening to Joel Olson on there talking about Governor Abbott or whatever, he's no good. So what goes through my mind is, well, this is probably the first step to them trying to get Texas to secede from the Union, because they've got it in their constitution. They can do so that they can divide up the union and seed more discord. That's what just goes through my mind when I hear these things.
Go ahead.
Very much agreed. You know, when you look at almost all of the information that comes across, when you look at it from that perspective of, I think those are the words, sowing discord, the more we are divided amongst ourselves, you know, the bigger problems we have. Trying, one of the things that I do, and Jim, this might freak you out, but I do this all the time, so don't be afraid. I always give everybody my phone number, and I'm going to do it again right now. My number is 310-619-3055. I encourage people to call me about, you know, anything to do with the WHO if they have questions, because what has happened over the last 4 years is relationships have been shattered. You can say what you want about COVID and politics and all that other sort of thing, but it's this constant attempt to divide and conquer. And so one of the things that I, you know, hope to be continuing to be doing in, you know, the future is trying to bring like-minded people together. And so, you know, one of those things is anybody who asks a question about a topic identifies themselves as still having the capacity to think, because the people who don't want to think don't ask any questions. They just do what they're told. And so what I am probably the biggest proponent of is, you know, people getting better connected. We don't need a centralized command and control replacement for the WHO. We need a distributed, decentralized empowerment of individual people. The stronger you make yourself, the better connected you are, the more friends, the more associates, the more like-minded people that you can get on the phone or go knock on their door or, you know, reach out to them in some way, the stronger and stronger you feel. And so, you know, maybe we need to get somebody to make a recording of the last line of the Star Spangled Banner and just play over and over and over again, so it gets beaten back into people's mind that we're supposed to be the land of the free and the home of the brave. And what we're lacking in many instances is the courage to stand up for our individual rights. And part of the reason why is people have been separated from their support mechanisms, their family, their friends, their work, and everything else. We need to actively reconnect into, you know, communities. You know, your family doesn't have to be blood. You know, your family are the people that are there for you when you need them. And they're doing everything they possibly can to sow division. You know, I know people who were the best of friends, but, you know, the Israeli-Gaza event happened, and their friendship got destroyed. You know, same thing with COVID, same thing with whatever is next. I don't know if I'm going off on a tangent, but I really feel it's an answer. I'm not advocating for a BHO, but I would not be surprised if they did it. You know, it makes sense from their point of view. It would just be another control grid over the top of those nations. And many, many people would fall for that as well.
Brian, would you agree that BRICS, however, is making a difference in terms of international economics, perhaps not with the Rothschild specifically, but, for example, if they go to a gold-backed currency, they're abandoning the use of the dollar. Vladimir Putin recently announced that, whereas in the past, 87% of Russian financial transactions were done in terms of dollars, are down to 20%. That's going to increasingly shrink worldwide. It's going to have a tremendous impact on the value of the dollar, and it's going to lead to a dramatic drop in the standard of living of every American right here in the United States. Your thoughts?
Well, I agree that the thing that I always go back to is this interview that a Jesuit had with, like, he was the premier of Australia, whatever he was, and this was in the 70s, and he said, we're going to move all the manufacturing out of the United States and move it to China. And he just went through all these things that were going to happen that have come true, and this was something from 73, and they just hate us. You know, the Rothschilds want to control the world, and they're going to do it with, you know, by destroying us, part of it. But when everything is done, when the smoke clears, they still want to be in control. It'll just be that we'll be weakened, and, you know, if you read that George Soros interview in Newsweek from the, you know, 70s, where he just said, I just hate the United States of America. And so I see all these things, but I don't see them losing their control the way things are now. Sure, things will be different. We'll be weak and we'll be poor and miserable, but it's always going to be them on top of it is what they want. So that's just how I look at all this.
Paul, I think you're here with us now. Your thoughts?
Well, I think what Brian just said is absolutely correct. They're just still going to be here in control, may take a different form or two. But, you know, to address what you just said, Jim, and this is the sort of thing you hear all the time on these sorts of shows, not just yours, but, you know, for example, you said that our standard of living will be reduced. Okay. And I just say, well, why? Why is that? Or, for example, the dollar will collapse, whatever that means, collapse. Doesn't make any sense to me because it's one of these, it's like a metaphor, but there's no real so-called mechanism behind it. Now, I know when I ask you this, you haven't watched it yet, but I sent you, like I did other people, the documentary, The Great Taking. It's on YouTube. Have you seen it?
I intend to, Paul, but yes.
There
no,
you go.
Inflation. Okay. Inflation would be the mechanism. I mean, the diminishing yes. value of the
but
dollar.
It's not. It's the opposite
more
of inflation.
Dollar for the same product. Go ahead.
So, okay, well, you need to see this. Not I intend to. Okay, you need to watch it today, and then I'm going to plan to watch it again. And you'll have a much better understanding of what it is they've done and what it is they're going to continue to do, which brings me to, you know, the sort of things that your friend, your guest here is saying, which I'm sure he's well intended and all that, but none of this stuff is going to matter. You know, making friends and relationships with, you know, neighbors and all this sort of stuff. It's just, you know, it's feel good nothing. Okay, the situation that we're in requires some pretty drastic action, and some people got to go, and there's just no other way to. You know, to cut it. I mean, the power that they have and the control that they have is greater than ever. And in my opinion, you know, we just have to have enough pissed off people to do something about it. You know, counting on other people to have your back when you do what? Stand up for your rights. What kind of rights are you standing up for? Most people live lives of comfort. They're not really bothered. You know, like I said, the average person's interaction with the government is a traffic ticket. That's about it. Everything else is essentially, you know, what I call voyeuristic. In other words, what we see on TV, what we hear on the radio and, you know, what people are talking about. It's just, it's, these international dealings and international politics and even national politics is all just, it's a spectator show. Again, I just don't see, I mean, I've heard talk for many, many, many years about this idea that we have to become more independent, that we have to, you know, make our own decisions, that we have to stand up. These are all just, I don't know, talking points, if you will. Anyway, that's my thoughts for the moment.
James.
With all due respect, okay, it may just be the circle of people that we connect with. And so I'm connected to people around the world who are taking action, pushing back. Look at what we talked about earlier with, you know, South Africa pushing back against Israel. The claim, you know, I'll put it this way. The alternative media in general has been gloom and doom and disaster and has been putting forth really the propaganda of the people who want to continue the power. There's an incredible difference between, you know, saying this is what they're going to do. This is what it's going to be like. This is how the future is going to be versus saying this is what they think they're going to do. And I'm not having any of it. Now, if you think you can take them on by yourself, that's obviously ridiculous. What I'm advocating is a part of what you said is we need a bunch of pissed off people. And the way you find out who those people are is you communicate with your friends and your family and your associates, your business, that you deal with, and you identify groups of people who are with you. Because independent action, there's an enormous difference between you going to try to reach out to your local, city official or county official or, federal official, state official, whatever it might be, versus prior to that, doing the hard work of organizing and collecting allies, getting connected to people, having those conversations, getting to know them, working together, devising a plan. Target issue and official. And rather than you trying to influence them, if you have 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 people, and I'm not saying gang up on them, I'm not talking about violence in any way, shape, or form, but if you say, look, here's the issue at hand, you call their office at 9 a.m. and set up an appointment to go talk to them. You set up an appointment at 10 a.m. and 11 a.m. and you.
Okay, this is a dream. So, James,
and organize to accomplish whatever it is you're trying to.
Hang on, Paul. I'll put you.
This is what
we need to do. It doesn't just happen. It happens because friends and family come together, organize, and use, follow their responsibility. Part of the problem.
To do what?
Our public servants are serving.
I get it.
People have not told them what we demand that they do.
For God's sake.
Their jobs for
I think,
us.
James.
I think Paul has some reservations. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, so I'll use the same thing that you just said. Okay, with all due respect. All right, listen, I've been around a while. I know what other people are like, okay? And if you're talking about, making appointments to see local politicians, I mean, it's literally insane. When you just said earlier a few minutes ago, I'm not talking about violence in any way, shape, or form. Well, then, in my opinion, you're not talking about anything substantial. And again, we don't need to, talk about it here on the air, but the bottom line is I think Jim is probably going to be closer to agree with me that there's no political solution to this, okay? It's not. I know Jim puts a lot of hope and faith in Trump, okay? I don't. I don't put any hope or faith in any politician. And you're exactly correct that we need to, as a group, as a whole, more of us disobey in whatever form or shape that comes in. But I'll just point blank ask you, see what the difference is between us, all right? I didn't wear a mask to go into any store during the whole thing, okay? I haven't filed a tax return to pay taxes in about 50 years. What about you? Okay. People that talk about what we need to do, most of these people are cooperators.
Okay. I mentioned earlier, maskcharade.com is very clear. We probably have, many areas of agreement. What I'm trying to say is if you abdicate your responsibility to tell your elected officials what you demand they do.
I do abdicate it.
Donors or lobbyists or the local
I think it's a joke, James. You demand these people do anything for us.
Hang on, Paul. You're gonna have your opportunity. Is it Brian, why you squeeze a few words in here?
I'm going to have to take off.
Okay.
Thanks. I'll let you guys go, okay?
You got it. You got it, Brian. Go ahead, Paul. Go ahead.
Why? Okay, so let me make it clear. I think that demanding anything of these people is a fool's errand. They're not going to do anything. What is it that you want them to do? Right? To vote differently? That's all they do, right? A street sweeper has more impact in society than any of these politicians, and in my opinion, is far more valuable. The system is completely rigged against us from the get-go, from the inception of the Constitution versus the Articles of Confederation. All right? It's ridiculous to think that anybody can influence anything with their vote. They deliberately set up a system where we don't have any say over issues. We vote for people. Okay? The minute that they say we can vote for issues, right, then that's actual real political power. they don't give us that, and they're not going to give us that. And I think Jim knows very well, when he's told the story so many times about how many politicians have actually refused to sign a pledge of loyalty to Israel. Okay, we live in a world where a certain group of people rules over us because they've set it up that way, and they have the balls to continue to do it. Okay,
Paul, I'm always anyway. Glad for your comments. We've been joined by Chicago.
If I may, Jim, Paul happens to be my middle name, and I would like to invite you to give me a call after the show. So I'd love to continue this conversation. We probably have a lot more agreement than you might imagine based on this conversation. My number is 310-619-3055. I'm open to conversation. I'm open to discussion. You might find that I'm much more in agreement with you than you might think. Let's carry on this conversation anytime you like.
Sure. Let me bring in Brew. Chicago Brew has joined us, Paul. Brew, go ahead.
Hello, James. Yeah, I've followed you and heard many, many of your conversations over the last 3 years thereabouts, James. But one point we should probably make, if there's any new listeners to this particular conversation, I'm sure along your research and so forth, you came across how many of the agencies such as CDC, FDA, government agencies around the world, not just the United States or Canada, including politicians all the way down to the dog catcher, that were exempt. They were exempt from even bothering to even think about having to take the jab that they called the COVID shot. You know, with the exception of a few feigned, like, you know, in 2020, 2021, you had Rand Paul. He disappeared for a little bit saying he had COVID, or any number of these politicians pretending they were sick with COVID. Not a single one of them were actually, well, opinion here. None of them were sick with anything. They were just using it as a theater play, but none of them took the jab. So can you point this out? Can you make statistics or references to Australia, Canada, Europe, United Kingdom, that these people were exempt and none of them took the jab, even though they were demanding and, with you, like you said, putting out mandates and regulations and their hypnosis that everybody else must take it? Go ahead.
Well, anyone who is aware of the definition of the term mandate, you know, understood that it was an illusion, it was programming, it was propaganda. I believe Rochelle Walensky was asked in a committee meeting at some point, you know, what percentage of the CDC had been jabbed. And, you know, she avoided the question. It's nearly impossible to get true data on what was going on there. But, you know, anyone who is aware realizes that it's a game, and they say you have to, but you don't have to. You only accept that if you don't understand who you are, what your rights are, and that you are responsible for standing up for your freedoms. Nobody's going to come and save you. And so around the world, you know, there's ample evidence, you know, visual evidence of, you know, people in front of the camera getting injected, and you can just see the fraud involved with it. You know, it's difficult to know. There's no running list of who got batch A or batch B or batch C. This is the problem. You know, it's the data has been corrupted out of the gate. I remember, maybe people have a memory of the term breakthrough infection. You know, it makes it sound like it's a good thing. It's a breakthrough. But early on in 2021, when they started rolling out the jabs, the CDC was keeping data of how many people who got jabbed subsequently were diagnosed with COVID, as BS as that may be. And on May the 1st in 2021, they stopped collecting the data. They just publicly said, "Now we're not going to track that anymore." That's like, that's the one thing that they should have been keeping track of. And then in September of that year, because they knew that the jabs were never studied to stop transmission, they were never studied to really do what people were tricked into believing, they changed the definition of the word vaccine rather than admit that it wasn't a vaccine. It wasn't working. It wasn't doing what it was supposed to. And
right.
So
this is what they do.
They are the committers of the fraud. And, yes. You know, how can we know who got what and who didn't? In and of itself, you know, that's telling. They have rules for thee and not for them.
Paul.
Right. Well, I mean, so the jabs were safe for anybody that didn't take them and effective for everybody that didn't want to harm when they took the jab.
Don't be so sure if you're looking at shedding and other possibilities.
Well, yes.
Many things that they're working on are not safe, even if you don't take them.
Right. No. See, this is the problem from the start, James, is that we're living under a paradigm that they've constructed and placed over us because they are in control of everything. We have money that isn't really money. We have medicine that isn't medicine. We have law that isn't really law. We have elections that aren't even really elections. Okay, we're living in their created world, and there's only one way out, in my opinion. And I'm sure we would agree on a lot. I'm sure our conversations would be interesting, although probably nothing would be accomplished. But like I said, a street sweeper accomplishes more than any of these teleprompter readers or politicians ever will for us. And it's just one of these things where you have to get used to the idea that the vast majority of people are never going to be clued in, even if you tell them to their faces, because they already believe.
One of your all-time best statements, Paul, love it. James, we're nearing the end. Would you like to offer a few general conclusions? I don't know if we have time for more from Brew. James, would you like to add?
You know, with the things that Paul said, as you said, I think we'll find very much agreement. The point is people need to devise the ideas that they want in the future and wake up every morning and work towards what you want. I'd be more than happy to have that discussion with anybody. Jim, I want to thank you for, you know, giving me the opportunity to be here with you. It's a pleasure. I've seen you from afar. It's an honor to be on your show. What we need going forth in the future is for us to determine, and the battles are difficult. I'm optimistic because I see what has happened over the last 2 years, and I see the attempts of what nations are trying to do to the WHO failing, and it makes me optimistic.
Thank you for wonderful hope.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Industrial Complex podcast here on Revolution Radio, Studio B, every Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Get fit, empowered, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
My name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion.